You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey guys, this is Greg with the Grindline Podcast, and I'm here to talk to you about DraftKings. With mobile betting now live in Michigan, it has never been easier to get in on the action and make those games mean just a little bit more. All you have to do is set your lineup, sit back, and watch your games. It's that simple. DraftKings has paid out over $7 billion, that's billion with a B, to users across all sports. So work on filling that wallet today with DraftKings. Download the DraftKings app and sign up using code THPN. New users will get a free entry with their first deposit. That's code THPN to get a free entry with your first deposit. Only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Hey, Ryan.
Greg.
Tyler's back. After what's it been, Tyler? 2 weeks?
Yeah, it's been like 2 weeks, I think. I hate missing episodes, but sometimes
friends, you know, you like to go to Boston Bruins games.
And watch them lose.
It's no big deal.
Oh, no, it was a good thing to watch them lose. I brought home a loss. You guys should be happy.
Were you wearing a Bruins jersey?
No.
He wore his Eisenman jersey.
I told you. I wore my Eisenman jersey. People love it.
I'm sure they do.
I'm the one loser wearing a Red Wings jersey, okay?
I feel like in Boston you can get away with that better than, say, like Chicago.
Yeah, Chicago, they'd never let you get away with it. Or apparently,
or St. Louis.
Or apparently Vegas.
Although, how about the St. Louis guy? The I don't know if you guys remember, like, the St. Louis run that they had to beat the Bruins in the finals there. That entire playoffs, every single game in St. Louis, on the right side of the bench, the Blues bench, I think it is, on the right side, was a Red Wings jersey, a guy with a red Wings jersey.
I remember that, yes. I was like, where are you going with this story? But yes, no, I do remember that.
How about in Vegas where they fought that guy wearing the Avalanche jersey? They, like, flag.
Is there more to it before the flag stealing?
The people keep trying to say, well, maybe he was waving his flag in their face and they couldn't see.
I get that part, but was he talking shit and getting in people's faces?
Even if you are talking shit, I mean, don't steal a dude's flag and be a giant dick. Or two, as he's going to get his flag back, push him over. Like, he was going up the steps and a guy just pushes him over and starts fighting him. So, like,
you have to act a certain way when you go to an opposing team's arena. Not saying you should fear for your life or fear for getting the crap beat out of you. But I mean, when you're going into an opposing arena, like, I wouldn't go to Yankee Stadium wearing a Red Sox jersey. And even if I did wear the jersey, I wouldn't be like up in people's faces or having a Red Sox flag draped around me. Like, that's not the thing I would be doing in Yankee Stadium or even in Chicago wearing a Red Wings jersey or a Red Wings like flag around me with the jersey on top of it. I don't know. That's just asking for it, in my opinion.
I mean, from where I saw where the video picked up, they weren't doing anything sitting there. Somebody came up, snatched the flag off, and then Vegas fans jumped on this guy. And then his buddy tried to break it up. They jumped on him, too. I couldn't see. I mean, from where the video was, I don't know what actually happened other than the fact that there was pushing going on. I don't know if punches were thrown. Anyways, don't be like that. That's all I got to say about
it. Don't be that guy.
If he was being a dick beforehand, who knows? I mean, we're not going to know any parts of the story other than what we just saw. But, yeah, that was a pretty fucked up situation.
Tyler, I think really quick before we get into tonight's episode, as everyone knows, me and Ryan said last week, we are kicking off our season of draft profiles with who we think
questions about draft picks.
Yeah, which these are basically guys we think are going to be there at six, and then one we think is going to be probably our odds-on favorite for pick 22, depending on how the beginning of the first round pans out. But
kind of a shit show.
Since Tyler decides when and he wants to join us, he has thoughts on the draft lottery and how he thinks it's terrible, even though the pick we got was the one we were supposed to. But go on, Tyler.
Well, I just think that after a while, you just get like, you know, as a fan, you're supposed to be excited for the draft lottery. It's supposed to be an opportunity for you to jump up. And like when you've had, what, three or four times now where you've either gone backwards or you've stayed the same, it's just like, why even watch? I didn't even watch this time. Like,
so you're saying you have lottery fatigue.
You guys wanted me to come on the live stream. I'm just like, you know what? Why? We're gonna stay the same, or we're gonna fall back.
Because it was fun, Tyler.
What pisses me the fuck off? I'm sorry. What pisses me the fuck off? And I know a lot of people are gonna be like, "Whoa, Seattle paid $750 million or whatever the hell it was, or how much was it?"
I don't know a lot of
whatever the entry
more money than I'll ever see in my life.
Right, whatever the entry fee was in the National Hockey League, the expansion fee or whatever.
$650 million. I just wanted to get that out there.
$650 million. Okay, so that's a chunk of change to the NHL. I understand that, but to give them the second overall pick is just that's a slap in the face to these franchises like Buffalo. And I know Buffalo got the first overall
Buffalo
pick.
Buffalo is a slap in the face to the NHL.
But I'm talking about these fan bases that have struggled for 10 years. New Jersey's been close to Buffalo? 10 years that they've been in the playoffs. No, they did have that run with Taylor Hall. But before that, they hadn't done much in the playoffs. Buffalo, of course, hasn't made the playoffs since, what, 2010, I think it was the last time they were in the playoffs. So, I mean, there's other organizations down there as well. I mean, Tyler, look at the Coyotes. They're another dumpster fire of an organization.
But is that the NHL's fault? No, that's their management's fault. No. That's their coaching staff's fault. That's their inability. That's
I understand
Arizona.
That,
they cheat, so they don't even get a draft pick this year.
I understand that, but to take a draft pick away from a team that deserves it, to give it to a team that's never played a damn game in the whole league, it's just
that's
mind numbing.
That's exactly the point, though. They don't have a team, and you can't start them off with a pile of garbage and expect them to
start them
get
off with
good.
The 10th overall pick or the 8th overall pick. Why give them?
I'd honestly give them
Anaheim,
the first overall pick.
I think they should have number one.
They should have
if
number
you're an expansion
one.
Team coming in, just give them the top pick. Let the rest of it, everybody else go at it.
See, and this is why I hate Vegas. This is exactly why I hate Vegas.
Because they're good.
Because they haven't earned it.
Sure
they haven't
have.
Earned any of
it.
How?
How they not
how
earned
have they
it?
Earned it? They haven't gone through any struggles. I mean,
oh,
yeah,
my
the
God.
San
okay,
Jose
so it's this.
Thing.
So Tyler is using the 60-year-old angry white guy argument.
Let me finish.
No, he's using the Columbus Blue Jackets argument.
Ugh. No, it drives
they
me
haven't
nuts
had the
that
pain
a team
we
like
had.
It drives me nuts that a fan base like okay, I understand they've built it and all that stuff. They've done a good job drafting and stuff, but for the most part, this whole thing was handed to them on a silver platter.
Nowhere look, close.
All right, when they came out of that expansion draft. Can you tell me one analyst or person that covers hockey had them picking better than third in their own division?
None.
No I'm just telling one. You right now, this whole fan base thing that they have is it's a sham. But just wait until that team's not good. Just wait. 10 years from now, 8 years from now, they'll probably be good for 8 or 10 more years or whatever the hell it is. And then when they go into a rebuild, it's going to be like Columbus. It's going to be like Arizona, where no one gives a fuck about that team. And when Detroit or Toronto or Chicago come into town, it's all those fans. I'm telling you right now. I called this at the beginning of it.
Hey,
I said
what?
That they'd be good at the beginning, and I didn't think they'd get to the finals. Go ahead.
Is their management and ownership team going to be pissed off that they're going to have butts in seats?
Nope.
No, but they're in Vegas.
They'll consistently bring in money, but. Mm-hmm.
But anyways, okay, back to the draft
you've
lottery.
Got 5 minutes.
I've got 3 minutes because I'm not gonna last longer than that with this.
Dad's gonna have what she said.
See, the thing that pisses me off about this is, like, Detroit has had opportunities to move up and they haven't moved up. They've had they've either stayed the same or moved back. Then you have a couple years ago where Philadelphia went from, I think, 8-1, and they had the first overall pick. You got Nolan Patrick. Now, I know Nolan Patrick has not turned out to the player that a lot of people thought
he you was mean going future to Detroit be. Red Wing Nolan Patrick?
Bingo. Yeah, potentially. But the thing is, it's like it gets frustrating, and that's another reason why I didn't watch it, and when it happened, I'm like, you know what? I'm not surprised, but I'm still pissed, and that's kind of where I'm at with it. It's like, yeah, you can get a good player at 6 overall, but if you're gonna build a franchise and you're gonna win Stanley Cups, you have to have a number one overall pick or at least a lottery pick. The last, I think, 8 teams, it might even be more than that. I remember seeing a stat, I think it was last year, when Tampa won the Stanley Cup. I think it's the last 8 or 10 teams that have won the Stanley Cup have all had at least one lottery pick on their team. Detroit does not have one. So, no. I mean, if you're not going to build this through free agency, which they're not going to do, which I don't expect them to do or want them to do, then you have to get lucky in this so-called stupid draft lottery. Just lose every game at this point. I mean, I hate tanking, but if this is what it's going to take, then lose every game. I make it as big of a shit show as possible. I don't know what to do anymore.
It
gets frustrating.
I believe in Steve Yzerman that we do not need a lottery pick. And me and Ryan, again, Tyler, if you just listen to episodes, me and Ryan talked a whole segment about how we don't need a lottery pick to win.
I do think you need a lottery pick. You know why? I mean, because unless you get extremely lucky and get like a Jonathan Toews at a 6 or a Patrick Kane, you know, further back, Patrick Kane, if you look at, you know, I know those weren't their draft picks, but like Matt Barzal, I think, was a 15th Toews or 16th overall.
What about Pastrnak?
Yeah, Pastrnak. I mean, there's fair points there, but I'm just saying, if you look at that team, they still have lottery picks on that team.
Sure.
So, I mean,
you go back to 06, 07, looking at the top 3 lottery teams of each of those years, at least one of them, based off the lottery pick, have won at least one cup, if not more.
Yeah.
I think Detroit was the last team that didn't have a lottery pick that won the Stanley Cup, right? I mean, Detroit had...
Go back a long way.
If you look at that 2008 Detroit Red Wings team, is there a first top 6 pick on that team? I don't think so. Not from the current roster that the Red Wings drafted and developed.
No, I don't think the 2008 team had a top pick.
No. No. They had a first round pick. It was Nicholas Cronwall, and I'm sure there was others, but besides that, I mean, they didn't have a drafted, developed lottery pick, and that's my point. You know, you look at, I'm not going to go through the whole thing. You can look at it, you listening to it or whatever, but there's umpteen examples of this, and this is what frustrates me. The league wants teams to be successful, and
no, the league wants parity. They want parity in the league, everyone to be equal. Yeah,
that joke of a comment.
Yeah, that's
or statement,
that's,
I guess you could say.
That, yeah, but then you have Tampa Bay circumventing the cap, which I think is right, by the way. I know a lot of people get pissed off at this.
But
why? The players don't get paid during the playoffs.
They're following the rule. They follow the rules, though, all season.
By the rules, it's right. Do we have to like it? Absolutely not.
No, we don't have to like it. But, I mean, they're probably going to win the Stanley Cup again. So, I mean.
Nah, Vegas. Was
Cronwall the highest drafted Red Wing on that team?
I think he was.
He was number 29 because Chelios is number 40. I'm sniping some players right now, but.
Well,
where was he drafted at?
But the thing, that's the thing that frustrates
Denny's
me.
Down the street.
I know you guys.
He wasn't drafted by Detroit, though. He was number 13 overall from Chicago.
Dan Cleary?
What about? Yeah. Oh, holy no. Hossa was on the 09 team.
Yeah, we don't talk about him. Thank you.
He doesn't exist anymore.
He had a great year that year, okay? He had a great year.
Well, we're actually going to talk about podcast stuff tonight. Back on track, guys. We are going to talk about prospects, and we are going to talk about the draft, but first we have a few housekeeping notes. The first one was that Albert Johansson was loaned to Farstead of the Swedish Hockey League. So Albert Johansson will not be playing in Grand Rapids next season unless he gets called back at some time. But I think that he's going to probably have to stay there, which is good. I mean, that's fine. It's a men's league, and it's probably the third best league on earth. So, but yeah, I think it's good. That'll be good for his development. I need him to not necessarily own the league, but he was really good last season to where he made the national team. Not that he played much, but he made the national team. And
wasn't he kind of sheltered when he first got brought up, and then he's like made it in with injury and then started actually playing well. And they're like, hey, you're actually kind of good.
Yeah. And he is actually kind of good. So, I think he'll get significant time in the SHL. And it's good for him because if the AHL, though, I think it would have helped him get used to a North American style game and smaller ice and kind of move up to play against would be or former NHL players and stuff like that. I don't know how much more he would gain here as a defenseman than he would with probably a lot more playing time over in Sweden. I'm not mad by the move.
Right. I mean, he's still 20, obviously, but he'll be 21 in January, so I think, I don't know, maybe, because they can't, when will the SHL start? Have they actually announced?
September, I think.
Is that the official start time right now?
September. I'm
pretty sure that's when they usually start.
Yeah, yep.
Is it? Okay, so, yeah, I mean, he had 19 points in 44 games over there this past season, so you gotta hope that that's the choice they make. I mean, they did get him to his ELC, so it doesn't burn a year, which is a positive. Maybe that's why they did it, and the plan will be come SHL season's end, depending on how things are going, they try to bring him over to Grand Rapids, or can they do the contracts? He's old enough and has, since he's played a year, he's not restricted from leaving the team or being called over to North America, correct?
I'm not sure how the contracts are now. Well, he's on loan. And I know during last season, when you were loaned to the SHL, you had to be there until the team's season ended.
But I thought
I think that might have been because of COVID, because we weren't playing and they didn't know how the season was going to go or anything. And they didn't just want to fill their teams with NHL players to have them just randomly called back home to empty out teams. So I'm not sure if that
Swedish contacts over there.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We'll have to ask Martin or Lars or whenever they have an update. I haven't seen anything change, so my assumption would be that that will carry forward. But I don't know as of right now if that's what will happen. And we got a while before the SHL season starts.
True.
So
when Martin listens, he can chime in and let us know the rules.
We'll see. Over there. The other piece of news that came out is that the New York Rangers have hired Gerard Gallant to be their next head coach. Again, something I'm not mad about.
End that talk.
Yep. Done. Bye. Gallant is not coming here. If Yzerman would have wanted him, he would be here.
True.
I think that Yzerman has his own plan. I think he has people in mind. I think he likes going outside the box, or at least outside the league. Or outside the coaching carousel to get a coach. And I think Gallant would have just been, again, recycling coaches that you've already used. So
speaking on that like exact point, so our little hockey pod group chat, did you see the comment that was made inside there?
I did not.
Shane over with the Senators. He's like, he'll be fired in 2.5 years. He'll have success in year one. Struggle in year two, but still make the playoffs and be a bubble 500 bubble team, and then be a 500 bubble team halfway through year three. So they'll look at bringing someone new in.
Yeah, I just don't. When I look at Gallant and I see you were fired from Vegas, who's a good team, and they weren't completely failing,
again in the conference finals,
and you still got fired. And when I look at something like that, I go, okay, there has to be something wrong. The Florida Panthers, though not a great team, left you on a curb and made you get a taxi.
Yeah, that was so fucked up.
So I'm just looking at it and saying, what went wrong? And again, he had a while before he didn't have a job, and then he just did great with Team Canada, and they won.
Great showing in the worlds, yeah.
And now he's going to be the next coach of the New York Rangers, and I'd rather have Yzerman give Blashill a year to see what he can do with a good team. And then if he falls on his face, bring in someone like Rickard Grönborg, whose contract will be up at the end of next season, or Lane Lambert. And I just don't think we need to get a coach that has been cycled through the league already.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you look at Tampa.
Sure.
What they Cooper. Did there with Cooper. Because, I mean, granted, he's following the Blashill path, but in regards to AHL to NHL. But at the same time, it's like you said, not that recycle moment. So I think you're on to something.
Let me ask you something about John Cooper, like though.
What?
How much of that is his team is really, really, really good?
Both. Well, I mean, they haven't faulted
what
he's doing.
It's his team is really good, but he's also a good coach. Swept
by the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Okay. Were they missing Stamkos that whole time? And wasn't Hedman injured?
Was he? I mean, they were banged up. The Blue Jackets did bang them up pretty good. I'm just, you know, trying to play devil's advocate. I think he's a good coach. I'm just saying, I think that's a really, really, really all-time good team.
Okay, Tyler, how bad are the Red Wings? How much of it is Jeff Blashill's fault?
Are you asking me that?
Yeah, because you're trying to use the same argument for Cooper, saying, well, the team's just really good. It's not much of the coach.
Well, I think coaching is important, but I think it's only important to, like, a certain extent. Like, I mean, yeah, the Red Wings aren't good. I mean, so you could put Scotty Bowman there, and they probably still wouldn't be good.
So I think that, and a lot of the conspiracy theorists are saying now that, oh, Yzerman is waiting for Cooper's contract to be up, and then he's going to bring Cooper to Detroit. I'm like, we're not trying to be a clone. Like, that's not what we're trying to do. But I think that Yzerman is going to go outside the box for someone like a Gromborg out of the Swiss League, who I think he's coaching the Zurich Lions right now, or someone like Lane Lambert, who is, what, an assistant with the Islanders?
You mean the Stanley Cup champion Islanders?
Shut up. He signed with them after Barry Trotz in 2018. So I think that's probably going to be the play there. I don't see anything. People that think he wants Cooper, I don't think are right. And that he's just going to go ahead and recycle a coach, I don't think that's right either. I think he's got his own plan. He knows what works. He knows what ideas work and fresh faces. So I think that's going to be the play there. But we have draft prospects to talk about. And we're all comfortable, right? We're seated. We have our notes. We're all good.
Yes.
Yeah, can I grab a beer real quick?
Oh, yeah. Take your time. So the way we're going to kind of talk about our draft prospects is who we think is in. And again, this draft is wide open because no one has a consensus top 10, let alone a top 5. Is we're going to go with who we think is going to be available at that 6 pick. And then next week, we're going to talk about Sebastian Casa, who I think we could target with the 22 if we want to take a goalie in the first round. But I think we're going to go with who we think is going to be available around 6 and who is a smart choice for the Wings and where we're at and what our needs kind of are, which really are everything right now. But where maybe not right D, but where we're kind of lacking a little bit. And we're going to start with what I think me and Ryan determined is the consensus pick at 6, which is
from us. Yes.
Yeah. The University of Michigan's Kent Johnson. And I think
Tyler, do you like that one?
Yeah, University of Michigan.
I do like that. Yeah, I do like
so
that.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to run through my notes. You guys can bounce your ideas off of me. We got some expert analysis and quotes from guys that I want to go through. If you didn't see our hockey card that I created, I have 6 hockey cards that I've created, digital hockey cards. So I might start selling them as NFTs. That would be cool. Make some money. But,
I don't know what that means, but I like it.
It's art that is put on the blockchain, and you can be the sole owner of it, and no one else can own it. It's like selling digital art pieces.
Yeah, bitches.
That are not copyable. But I made some cool cards with the quotes from some of our experts on it. And we're going to start with Kent.
You know what else would be really fun with that?
What?
You should do a GIF of all of the guys we picked and be like, who's it going to be? Like the Red Wings did, where it's like 1 through 8 or whatever it was.
6. I got 6, but one of them's late first round. So 5. 5 guys. Who's your pick?
Yeah. There you go.
But we're going to start with Kent Johnson. Kent Johnson, my notes say super creative with the puck with quick and accurate release. By super creative, I mean he scored a Michigan goal in juniors. He did the wraparound lacrosse style goal. He played for the Trail Smoke Eaters in the BCHL. But he's super creative with the puck with a quick, accurate release, great handling and puck protection, fantastic along the wall. And when he doesn't have the puck, he finds space easily to create chances. Not selfish. He'll pass or take the scoring chance. And as Ryan said last week, he stands out by himself on a loaded, absolutely loaded Michigan team. Mm-hmm. But he watching him, you can see why he is playing with those top guys, because that's how he plays. So we've got Chris Peters, who right now, I want to thank Chris Peters, Dylan Krill, and our friend Tony and Will Scouch from Scouching and McKean's. But Chris Peters, he is runs Hockey Sense with Chris Peters on Substack, which is a subscription service you can get about prospects. He is formerly from ESPN, CBS Sports, and USA Hockey. So thank you, Chris. Chris's notes on Kent Johnson kind of almost mirrored mine. A high-end skill player who might be one of the best puck handlers in the entire draft class. His skill allows him to create separation to make and extend plays. His con was kind of his defensive ability lacks, which is why some don't feel he'll be able to play center at the next level. And which is true, he played left wing at U of M. But for Trail, the Smoke Eaters, he played center. And a lot of the junior highlights that I watched of him, he was a damn good center and an offensive center.
So I'd almost say you could compare him to maybe Rasmussen in the sense of going back and forth, not sure if he's going to be a center at the higher level, but has that ability when you maybe put him there, and it could be a project type deal.
Sure, and it's always hard to transition, but the flexibility is good.
Yes.
I don't see him more like a Rasmussen. I see him more like a Dylan Larkin, where Larkin started on the wing and then kind of eased his way into center as, you know, his career went on. And, I mean, Kent Johnson's ability with the puck is ridiculous. I don't know if you guys saw the goal against the University of Minnesota. He takes you out of your seat. It's unfortunate that the folks didn't get to see him in the NCAA tournament this year because of the whole COVID situation that Michigan had. But, I mean, he might be back at Michigan along with Owen Power and Beniers as well. I don't know if Beniers will be in the NHL or not. But, that Michigan team is loaded, and they'll be back probably next year fighting for a national title.
I think all the people that I gathered information from, I think all of them said he is probably the most creative player available, just with what he can do with the puck. But I've also seen that his energy can sometimes limit his, and this was notes from Will, who said that while skilled, the most frustrating player this year due to overhandling, lack of consistent 5v5 creation, and explosive energy on his feet limits his evasiveness. So those were some of the negatives, but again, arguably the most skilled and creative player available, that can drive possession of the puck and potential scoring upside with off-puck habits, getting to the net and gaining confidence. That was the other thing that I saw, is when he wasn't with the puck, he was with the net. So
His skill in tight, when you mentioned with the net, like that's the other thing I noticed, is that he can make things happen when he's in close to the net and when he's surrounded by guys, not just on the goaltender being cute and flashy. He can get the puck and keep the puck away from players in a way that most of these other guys I was looking at could not do. And that kind of goes along, add that to the hockey sense that he's got, because he's a fantastic playmaker and passer, which Detroit, I think, has kind of enough of those in a way. But he also has both the passing, but also the super quick and accurate shot, which is equally fantastic for him.
Yeah, I think I watched a clip of him at Michigan where he held the puck for at least 15 seconds, just evading people. Like, there were three guys around him. He just skated around all of them with the puck. And it kind of puck protection a la Henrik Zetterberg, who was just phenomenal at protecting the puck. That clip, that's what it reminded me of, and just how he would not concede the puck to the opponent, which is amazing. And that's, again, something we need more of, is offensive zone creation, which he could bring. If you could transition him back to center, he could be a 1A, 1B with Dylan Larkin, and you'd have that kind of setup guy running too deep who could also create offense by themselves. So that's kind of what I looked at in Kent Johnson. I think if we're looking for another high-end center, and you think Johnson could transition back, that's a good pick. But in the end of the day, you're also looking for offense, and Johnson as a winger provides the offense.
Just think, though, if you're looking 2 to 3 years out, potentially, and you do bring him in as a center, and you've got guys like Bergeron and Raymond now on NHL roster, and you can put him between guys like that, or like Bert on the wing, or whomever else that you can, like Zadina, you can play him with Rasmussen, and they can kind of rotate back and forth, kind of like what we've seen.
Heller, you could put him up with Larkin.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah,
that's the flexibility that, like you mentioned, Greg, that you get with a guy like that. And to me, that's what you look at some of the acquisitions that Yzerman's made. It seems like that's what he wants the most, is guys that can play everywhere and not afraid to play in the defensive zone as well. Obviously, the 200-foot game with Blashill, that's probably was the most commented thing for a lot of these younger guys this season, especially with like the likes of Zadina. But if Johnson can come in and do that while also switching between center and wing and making that offense just click and happen, that's where you have that extra upside, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure.
Greg, of the people that you've talked to, do you think he's going back to school, or do you think he's ready to make the next jump?
He needs to get bigger.
Yeah, I'll go over his
tall enough,
elite
but he's
prospects.
Only 165.
Yeah, so Kent Johnson's 6'1", 165. So he either got to have a hell of a time in a gym, or he's going back to school for another year. I can't even see him in Grand Rapids at 165. To be honest,
no.
I think at that weight, you got to think he's probably at least a solid 2 to 3 years away. And I mean, we know that the Red Wings program, especially their offseason program, is absolutely fantastic. So it's gonna if they were to take him, you know, he's gonna be there quick.
Yep.
But I think that when I say quick, it's about 2 years.
Yeah, if you can get him to, you're not gonna bring him in until he's probably like 190 at least. So.
Yeah. 180, 185, I think, at least gets you to a point. But at 6'1", you got to think, yeah, you're probably closer to 190, 200 at that point.
Especially with his speed, he's able to get away from people. And, I mean, you don't have to be exactly 200 pounds to be in the league, but you got to be muscular. And he's on the skinny side, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that kind of adds to his elusiveness, but if you get him bigger, he's going to be even harder to push off.
Right,
a puck.
Right.
Well, you think about it. You're looking for a 6'1 comparable. Look at Larkin. I don't know what his draft weight was, but he's up to 198. So
I bet you he was only like 170, 165, somewhere around there.
Greg, I hear you typing. Are you checking?
Yeah, I don't think I can go back that far, though, to figure out what Dylan Larkin's draft weight was.
Let's see. I bet we can find it.
Oh, 190.
He was 190 at draft?
Yeah, I have an article from April 24th, 2014 that says Dylan Larkin, height 6'1", weight 190.
Oh, okay.
So he was yeah.
All right. Not a good comparison, duly noted.
Good job, Ryan.
Height though. Hey.
Spot on.
There you go. You're welcome.
Tyler, do you have any notes on him that you wanted to go over?
On Ken Johnson, I mean, I'm just kind of reiterating what I said earlier. I mean, he's really good. That goal against U of Minnesota was incredible. I mean, the amount I saw Michigan play this year, because the NHL hadn't started a lot or hadn't started yet this year, was a lot. I saw Michigan play a ton. Now, the one thing I will say about him is you think of like a Jack Eichel on Boston University, or you think of a Jonathan Toews way back when he played for the University of North Dakota. He doesn't stand out like that every single night. There's nights where he looks like he's the best player on the ice, and there's other nights where he kind of looks like Johan Franzen, where he kind of takes time off and you don't really notice him. So, I mean, and he did play up and down the lineup too. That's another thing that Mel Pearson kind of had him doing at the U of M. So, I mean, he's a freshman, so I guess it's kind of hard to tell. But a freshman like Jack Eichel, I know that's not a fair comparison, but I'm just saying guys that have dominated college hockey that are ready for the NHL or ready to be picked in the top five of the NHL, top six of the NHL draft, I mean, typically don't take time off. And it seems like he does take a little bit of time off. That's the only concern I really have.
See, I don't know if I necessarily agree about the time off comment, because a lot of the things that I read, and I mean, granted, I didn't get to watch the amount of games that many would have, but the comment that sticks out to me, and I got Claire McManus from Dauber on here, Johnson's usually one of the most consistent players on the ice.
In terms of that, production and energy. And
how he's been, yeah. So that to me is what is. And when you watch the highlights, like and you mentioned that he's not lighting up the college ranks, but again, you
look who he's playing with.
Look at the roster that he's on. He still averaged more than he had 27 points in 26 games. Yes, that's nothing crazy, but on such a balanced team. Now, maybe I guess to your point, Tyler, I get where you're at, because you would think if he's playing with that level of talent on that Michigan roster, there'd be more points there from him as well. But I think that the NCAA competition is that step up that you kind of want to hope for, and where they've really come a long way in the last several years in regards to just what is on the ice, the product on the ice, because you're starting to see more draft picks coming from a college team rather than like the OHL or WHL and so on and so forth. So having just averaging more than a point a game on a stacked Michigan roster, to me, that stands out more, and what he's able to do on the ice with that type of talent while not getting buried underneath him. I think that's the important aspect of it. And if he stays at U of M next season, which probably seems the most likely scenario, that's huge. And he's only going to get better. But then if you got a team like Detroit behind him, he's playing in Detroit's backyard at Ann Arbor. They have that direct contact to tell him, hey, go do this, like whether it be work. And he's got the U of M workout facilities as well. That already is a huge leg up, and not having to come over to like Plymouth or even Detroit for that matter. He's already there. So I think that's where drafting a guy like him really puts Detroit at an advantage, because he's in the backyard. Like I said, he's easily accessible. He can come watch games, talk to the team. And I don't know how college is about that, but I mean, I don't think there's any issues with him having to do those things. But
he's,
as long as he's not signed, I don't think it causes issues, obviously. So I really think that it's one of the more advantageous picks that Detroit could make.
Especially if you look at his stats year over year, starting with juniors. In 2018-19, in 57 games, he had 20 goals and 26 assists for 46 points. The next season in 2019-20, he wore an A. In 52 games, he had 41 goals and 60 assists for 101 points. So if you look at his first season at University of Michigan, 26 games, 9 goals, 18 assists for 27 points. If he goes to University of Michigan next season and puts up 40 points in 26 games.
Yeah, if he doubles that point production, whew.
Like, that's what you want to see. And he's a first year in the playoffs for Trail. He had 12 points in 12 playoff games. And then in 2019-20, he had 7 points in 4 playoff games. So he improves not only in the regular season, but also in the playoffs. So we'll see what happens. And like you said, I think he would probably go back to Michigan for another year, unless they want to move him to Grand Rapids. But I'd probably keep him in the college route just for one more year, just to see what he can do and see if he can dominate once guys like, you know, Owen Power is not going to be there probably next year. And Matty Berniers is probably not going to be there next year. They'll probably go to the AHL. So you'll see what happens with them there.
Is he making the team his own at that point?
Well, now Owen Power.
Greg, you got to say it right. It's Matty Berniers. He's from Massachusetts.
Yeah, whatever.
But I swear to God, he is.
Owen Power says he might go back to school. And I would, too, if I was about to be drafted by the Buffalo Sabres. But
One thing about it for those guys, though, like, it's such a hard thing to go from college right to the NHL.
Oh, I think they would go to the NHL.
What, the AHL?
Yeah, would almost be shocked if any first-round pick plays in the NHL next year. Almost shocked. Because if Owen Power is the consensus...
They play in the NHL. They might not, like, start in the NHL.
If Owen Power is the consensus number one and he goes back to Michigan, he can't come to the NHL.
Right.
So...
No, he can sign after the U of M season's over.
Sure, he can do that, but...
Do you think they're going to wait that long?
Oh, no. Buffalo's not going to be in the playoffs, so...
Sure, yeah.
Good joke, eh?
You lock in that ELC, though.
Yeah.
I think for a couple of those guys, if Power in particular, if he's locking in that ELC, I think he's going to be... He's getting ice time, but I could see them all staying one more year because... Adding an extra body under contract under teams that, I mean, most of these top teams or top drafting teams aren't cash strapped, but the longer you can make your cap space be valuable, especially like for a trade, for instance,
yep.
You want to do it. Now, granted, these guys are making $900,000 a year if you're a top pick under your ELC, but that's still $900,000 in cap space that you can negotiate with another team to take on a shitty contract.
Yep.
Greg, let me ask you this, and we can move on after this, but let me ask you this. Does it make you weary drafting a college hockey player, given the fact that, like, if they're there for their entire 4 years, they can kind of dictate where they go if they don't sign?
You mean, does it
kinda
make
like
me
the
leery?
Keith Petruzzelli thing? Yeah.
No, I don't think so. And I think the Keith Petruzzelli thing is largely overblown. I don't see from any reliable sources that Keith Petruzzelli does not want to come to the Detroit Red Wings. I saw one guy make up a thing in an article that had no citation Legs. Or source yeah. or anything. So, no, I don't think so. And especially with the Red Wings, original six franchise, history, guys, tons of Hall of Famers. Had the best coach ever in the NHL. You don't kind of say, you don't pass. I don't want to play for the Red Wings. I don't think many people would do that. So no, it doesn't make me worried at all.
Yeah, I think you're kind of past that point of having to really be worried because you go back.
Well, Adam Fox just had that recently, didn't he? Wasn't it 2 years ago? And now he's a Norris Trophy candidate with the Rangers. He was drafted, I think, by Carolina. Or maybe it was Anaheim. I forget what team it was. But
you're looking at non-original six teams, like, kind of like to your comment there. Because then all you got to do is go back to last offseason and look at Bobby Ryan.
Yep.
His reason for coming to Detroit, Steve Yzerman.
Well, I think
These kids are young, but they're not that dumb.
No.
If they don't know who these guys are and know what the Red Wings' past and history is about, then you probably don't really necessarily, I mean, unless they're European, but you look at most of the Swedish players and they
even
know
those guys.
They know Cronwall and
they know
Lidstrom. So I think the Red Wings are still a pop culture icon in a way enough. And with Yzerman in charge, they know what he did in Tampa. They know what he's doing now. I don't think that's as much of a worry being Detroit.
If anything, they know Steve Yzerman as a player. And that should instantly make them come over. But the thing that I look at is, they should also see opportunity in Detroit. There's a lot of opportunity.
Yeah.
If you're a first...
That's the biggest part of
it. Yeah, if you're a first-round draft pick, you're going to know that in 2-3 years, you're going to be on the team, and you're probably, if you progress the way you're supposed to, probably going to get top 6 minutes. So you have a chance to be one of the faces of a franchise if you do what you're supposed to do and you pan out. Mm-hmm. And there's just that time there. So... the next one we're going to go on to, because we've got 15 minutes left, and that doesn't seem like enough time. Luke Hughes.
We can carry it over. That's not a bad thing.
Sure. We'll go into the defenseman, Luke Hughes. My notes on Luke Hughes is we can get the third Hughes brother. It's like a prophecy. If New Jersey doesn't take him to have two Hughes, because their only way to counter Quinn Hughes would be to have two of them. But I have under Luke, I have defense can be a little shaky at times, but is probably the best skater among the defensemen in the draft. He's damn hard to catch. He's good for jumping in on the offense when it's needed. Though a lot of the highlights that I watched of Luke Hughes, sure, he jumped in on the offense and then absolutely nothing happened. So he's tried to create it. It didn't work. Luke Hughes, and I don't know why my page didn't pull up. Hold on. Luke Hughes has an advantage of being a late birthday. So he is one of the...
that's my first bullet point.
Yeah,
too.
One of the youngest people in the draft, if not the youngest. Yep. Luke, he's a 6'2", 176 pounds. So he's taller, but again, he's still light. And I have Dylan Krill's notes because Dylan Krill loves to scout the USHL. And
what up Chris's for this one?
His notes on Luke Hughes, he says, Hughes has some of the highest potential because of his ability to drive play from the blue line and being one of the youngest players in the draft. He's an excellent skater and can contribute offense on shift-to-shift basis, but at times he's found skating into traffic and makes plays with no purpose, which could become a habit. That is the... Yeah. I asked everyone for a couple pros and a con just to kind of get an even look at a player instead of all pro, and then you get too excited, and when something bad happens, your world shatters. But I think that Luke Hughes is probably up there with, if not the best defenseman after Owen Power, tied with probably someone like Edvinson.
I like what Chris said.
Or Brant Clark.
I like what Chris Peters said when you asked him for his input. His first line there, the best skater among defensemen in the draft with incredible edge work and elusiveness. What does Detroit lack for the most part?
Whatever that. Danny DeKeyser doesn't have.
Exactly that on the back end. I mean, you know that they're getting that with Seider, but I mean, we talked about it ad nauseum this season, is when Detroit's defense was actually mobile and making either getting the puck up ice themselves or making that great first pass out of the zone. He does both of those things extremely well. And again, I know we reference Tampa over and over again, but look at how they're set up and how their defense handles the puck out of their own zone, gets up the ice, and causes havoc. That is what you are starting to see Yzerman try to do with this roster. It's what Seider's doing right now. It's what we kind of saw, as much as we hated it, Mark Stahl doing. Troy Stetcher, I think, was the best example of that. You look at what Hronek can do with his outlet passing. Luke Hughes would fit that mold perfectly. And as you mentioned, he's young. I think that's the most beneficial aspect to it. And Tyler, here's your fun part. He's committed to U of M, so we would be seeing him with Kent Johnson and these guys potentially next year.
Well, he's also a lefty, which we do not have a clear-cut top-pairing left defenseman. So you could have, eventually, a top pair of Luke Hughes and Moritz Seider, which... put your pants back on, but that's like something the dreams are made of. If he pans out,
I mean, you think about the guys that we talked about at the onset, Johansson, bringing him in this group. If you got McIsaac healthy and bringing him into this group, you've got a defensive core in the next 3 years. Majority of them are still all under 20 because Hronek's the elder statesman of this now at 23 currently. 3 years out, still 26, but all these other
DeKeyser's older than Hronek.
Not talking about him.
Oh, you mean DeKeyser, the good defenseman?
The skilled,
the guys that can actually skate.
Yes, I'm not. DeKeyser, he finally came alive at the end of the year. I'm not going to bash him for what he's done enough to what he needs to do with Detroit. But when you look at, if you draft a guy like Luke Hughes, you've got Johansson, you got McIsaac, you got Seider. There's other guys I haven't even mentioned that could potentially fit in here.
Yeah, like Volander.
Yeah, so there's a lot there that is going to really transform Detroit's back end that they've needed, that can make it reminiscent of old.
Yeah.
So,
which is what we need.
Yes. The only thing here to watch with him, you don't hear it enough talk about it, is what can he do defensively. Is he solid or is he going to be, I like what Chris said here. I shouldn't say I like it, but he said he was not as utilized in key defensive situations and at times can get overpowered in his own zone when defending. So that's going to be the teaching moment. He'll be a bit of a project, in my opinion, if that's a comment you're seeing right now.
Yeah.
So when he gets to U of M, you know he's going to be against that better competition. He's going to have to be more sound in his own end. But we know that when he gets that puck, things are going to happen. He's going to be going the other way. He's going to either be leading the rush or he's starting the rush by getting that sweet breakout pass because he is fantastic once the puck's on his stick.
Well, that's similar to what Will said. Will's con was defensive entry defense is far too inconsistent and at times poor and can be guilty of overthinking and overhandling the puck in the offensive zone. So, I mean, it's maybe sounds like a he knows he's going to be drafted, and he's trying really, really hard to look really, really good and overdoing mm-hmm. it a bit.
That's fair.
And he just needs to settle down and find his groove. But Will's positives are the best rush offense defenseman through the neutral zone you'll find, with volume and efficiency in spades, and the benefit of youth at the top end of the draft compared to the other players nearly a year older. So everyone says the same thing. The young factor, he's got more time to learn, mm-hmm. and you're going to have him for longer because he's younger. And that the offensive talent and the ability to join the rush is there. It's just he, again, is a defenseman. It seems like you're either a really good offensive defenseman, a really good defensive defenseman, or you're kind of mediocre at both. And
you get by.
And if you can if you're a really good offensive defenseman and you can just be a good defensive defenseman, you're going high. So mm-hmm. I think that's kind of what we're looking at with Luke Hughes, is if he can improve his defense, the offense is there. And that's kind of what we need. And again, we need another top pairing left defenseman.
I think one way you can kind of look at him and not get away from the size factor, and I'm not sure how good his shot is in what I was watching. It was nothing to really scream over, but he's smart with his shots.
Yep.
But the way he moves along the point in the offensive zone kind of reminded me of what Victor Hedman does, where he's all over the ice. You put him as a one-man point guy on the power play, he's going left to right, covering the entire ice. Luke Hughes could do that. He's doing that now, and he's not afraid to jump in. He's not afraid to attack the middle of the circles, and he's great at getting the puck back and holding on to it. So if those things are already there, getting the defensive side figured out, as long that's teachable, and he can break through, he's going to have to break it. And
I think he looked,
he's got now.
I think he looked a lot like Quinn in a lot of those videos. I mean, the way he skates, the way he handles a puck, the way he's able to walk the line, kind of to your point. No, definitely not as fast, but he's also bigger, so, you know, it's a little bit harder to be as fast. But he's elusive, I thought.
Absolutely. Yeah. What I noticed to that point, with your elusiveness factor, is I actually had a note that he is really good at, kind of similar to Seider when you look at it, really good at creating separation at the blue line in the offensive zone. So when he gets pinched up tight, he's really good at kind of doing a feint one way and really moving his feet side to side while keeping the puck kind of snug toward the blue line and really getting away from somebody. He's really smart with the puck in that sense. And I think that's, if you watch a lot of what Seider's done, you see that from him quite often. So again, that whole, how good are you going to be with the puck in the offensive zone? That's what Detroit needs from their defensemen.
Yep.
And if they brought something like that in, it's incredible. It's a win right away.
Puck protection. That's what we need from our defensemen.
Smart.
Okay, so Romanoff just killed Pietrangelo. I don't know if you guys saw that.
I don't know. Dougie Hamilton apparently earlier got permission to speak to other teams.
Yeah.
That's quite interesting, too. I saw that.
Anyways.
So I think, Tyler, is that all you had on Luke Hughes? Do you have anything else?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's pretty much all I had for the most part.
Okay. So we're going to move on to our last prospect of the night. We are going to talk about Fabian Lysell, which every time I talk to Tony, he just tells me how much he loves Fabian Lysell and how amazing he is and how he should probably be a top three pick.
He is so smooth with the puck.
My notes on Fabian Lysell are: small but fast and a great skater, can be easy to push off the puck at times, but because of his size, he is able to easily blow past defenders. I like Dylan's report. He says Lysell is a high-octane winger who never takes his foot off the gas. He has the ability to drive a line from the wing and create electric, eye-catching plays. Has high compete level and great offensive tools, will be valuable to many teams. He will need to manage his decision-making to limit his turnovers so he doesn't become a liability for his team. Mm-hmm. And when we say small, he's 5'10", but he's 172. So he's the same weight as a lot of the 6'2" guys in a smaller package. But I think the league is getting less and less worried about a player's height, as long as they can overcome the deficiencies of being a smaller player, such as being easy to push off the puck.
Yep.
And you can see that in a player like DeBrincat.
Yes, absolutely. I think, kind of like to that note with what Chris said, that is a potential worry. So it's something he's going to have to kind of grow out of, in the sense that what he said was when his speed is nullified, because when he gets out there, especially in the open ice, the son of a bitch is fast.
Yeah.
He is pulling away. If you let him get two steps on you, just might as well pick your jock strap up and just kind of wait for
aerodynamic, Ryan.
Yeah. So what I was going to get at was what Chris Peters was saying is when his speed can be nullified, especially, it's a legitimate concern about his ability to create in ways outside of the rush when his speed can be nullified, especially due to his lack of physical stature and strength.
Yep.
So you need the weight, maybe not so much the weight, but definitely the muscle, because if he puts more on in terms of like strength there, kind of like to what Chris mentioned, he's going to be a legit scary player. Because what I caught from watching and some of the notes that I saw from other of the analysts out there, he is a great, fantastic, superb two-way player.
Yeah.
And he is very strong in the puck defensively. And when you look at kind of like what I mentioned earlier, Blashill gushing over these young guys playing a 200-foot game, how much of an impact that Yzerman claims the 200-foot game, I shouldn't say claims, mentions the 200-foot game is, like those are what this organization has been talking about and been all over since Stevie took over. So he fits that sense of their draft pick to a T, because he's already got the skill, he's got the shot, he can pass fantastic as well, and he plays defense.
The two-way part of hockey in the Red Wing organization has been going on since, you know, the mid-80s when Steve Yzerman got to Detroit.
Back to the early years of Steve, yeah.
I mean, you look back, and then obviously, you know, you had guys like Datsyuk and Zetterberg that kind of continued it. And now even right now, Dylan Larkin is still one of the better defensive centers in the entire league. I mean, he's good at taking the puck away. We don't have to talk about it, but I mean, this organization has predicated themselves on being good defensively and in your own zone and responsible. And it goes back to the early days of Steve Yzerman. Fabian Lysell, I love this guy. I love watching this guy play. Some of the highlight videos, not great, but I mean, he just seems like so fast and so elusive. And there wasn't a whole lot of stuff I saw like away from the puck, but a lot of stuff of you know, moves, and he just looked like a good player. The only thing is, to me, I mean, he didn't really play a whole lot in the SHL this year. What, 23 games? What do they usually play over there? 50, 60?
He played 26 games. But that's the thing, though, Tyler. He played 26 games against men in men's league. Yeah. And that's, I think, part of the reason he bulked up a bit, because he's playing against big guys in the SHL.
Well, one thing I also saw is his play away from the puck kept him in the SHL. You know, they could have, he asked for a trade from Frölunda, the junior 20 team, league, yeah, or whatever. Yeah. And he ended up in Luela. Is that how you say it? Either way, I mean,
Tyler,
the guy is
trying to pronounce names, and we just gave up.
I think it's Lulia.
Lilia. Okay, whatever. The guy competes. It just seems like he wants to play. He was playing on the junior team in Frölunda, and he's like, yeah, I don't want to do this. I want to play in the SHL. Request a trade. Probably went up to the owners like, the general manager, I want to trade. I want to play in the SHL, and this is what I want. And you know what? He produced. Yeah. He did a good job. Mm-hmm. He didn't put a lot of points or put a lot of pucks in the net.
But he got time.
He got time. He got experience. And, I mean, that's really all I have to say about that. I love this guy, though.
Yeah, and Tony, like we said, Tony loves him, too, because he will go on and on and on about Fabian Lysell. But I think that's the big thing, is that he got time to play in the SHL, and it wasn't just pity minutes. He earned his minutes and got some decent time playing against men in what I said I'd consider the third best league on earth. You can go NHL, KHL, SHL, and you're right there playing with, again, guys who a lot of them used to play in the NHL. So it's invaluable experience, and again, small, offensive, skilled, fast, two-way player, and I think that Will's Will said the same thing. One of the most exciting players available with enormous potential as a high-paced 200-foot workhorse with threatening offense. So
that's a good comment.
Yeah, I think we've said the same thing. Attacks the net with speed and aggression, but can quickly find line mates and create offense from the perimeter. So if he's not going to score a goal for you, he's going to find the person that can score the goal for you.
Mm-hmm. I think that's key because he's a right winger. He's a right-handed shot. I think that's the other aspect that really kind of sets him apart from many of the other draft picks that are top end right now. Because majority of the guys you're talking about are left-handed, but you bring in that right-hand aspect. I mean, Detroit, you got Raymond as a winger on the right with a right-hand shot. You can bring him in with him, and they can put them on the power play.
Yep.
Or even on power play one and two, you've got two fantastic right-hand shots on each power play. Absolutely. Now you've got full puck movement going along. You got one-timers on both sides that actually aren't going to miss the net every time they shoot the puck. I'm sorry, Kulkinen. But, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's and again, you want a Swedish connection. There's your Swedish connection, right? We're all about true. The Swedish connection.
The mafia is being rebuilt, so it's coming.
Yeah, but that's where we're going to end it tonight with those three prospects. We will continue on next week. We'll do Mason McTavish, Chaz Lucius, and Sebastian Casa. But I want to get you guys' final thoughts before we sign off. And tonight we will start with Tyler since he's actually here, and I don't know when he'll be back again. So
I will be back next Monday, not to worry. Yeah, I mean, I don't really have a whole lot of final thoughts other than I'm just looking forward to continuing to cover this draft because, I mean, it is one of the more fascinating drafts that we've ever seen. I mean, you know, Owen Powers, the consensus number one overall pick, but we have no idea after that where the chips are going to fall, who likes who saw who play. So, I mean, it's going to be fascinating to see over the next couple weeks here, next month or so, to see what happens and you know, what the mock drafts look like and Bobby's mock draft and Craig's mock draft and everything. So we'll have to see what happens and, you know, we'll see if anything leaks out, but whether who Eiserman's looking at. I mean, we don't think that that's going to happen, but hell, you never know. I guess pigs can fly once in a while. So other than that, I mean, those are my final thoughts. Ryan, you go ahead. You can follow me on Twitter at SealDog91.
No, final thoughts for me. It's fun watching these guys and what they can bring. It's nice that we're expanding on it a bit more this year. I think we kind of have. Yep. I don't think we have. We really have slacked on kind of talking about it. At least I have. So seeing these gents a little bit more, getting the quotes and comments from some of the people that are do this professionally makes it a little more enjoyable. So this part's fun. Greg, we need to reach out to Rohan and get his sleeper pick because apparently he's been all over it the last couple of years. So we need to get his take on some of these guys as well, I think. But
he probably wants.
We're gonna have to pay his speaker fee, aren't we?
I think so. Well, no, we've got it.
Cameo. You know,
get a cameo, Jesus Christ! But no, I mean it's an intriguing draft, as Greg you mentioned that. It's who we get. They're gonna be good. It's the biggest question is gonna be how long will it take them to get in Detroit?
Yep.
And that's gonna be the concern. I shouldn't say concern. The uncertainty. If he's there faster, that's the ideal scenario, and that's when we know that Eiserman really hit a home run. But as far as positioning, I don't care where it comes from as long as they're impactful and can do their job well. Now, I say that with a little asterisk. I don't necessarily want a goaltender at number six.
Nope.
If it happens, it is what it is, but there's far too much skill, especially on the forward side of things, that Detroit needs now that they don't have to spend an exuberant amount of money on in free agency, which wouldn't be a bad thing as well, but they can't do yet or shouldn't do yet. So it's an intriguing time. There's fantastic. We got the conference finals, if you want to call it that, taking place right now. So
semifinals, get it right.
It's whatever.
Where Montreal's going to get a Canadian-sized hole stomped in them by
yep.
Vegas.
I was just getting ready to say, fuck the Habs.
Yep, so bye-bye.
Don't like you no more.
It was fun playing in the kindergarten division, wasn't it?
I will not be rooting for Vegas.
No, I will, because
story.
Tyler.
I'm not rooting for Montreal.
Montreal played in the kindergarten division, and now they're going to see what real hockey looks like with the big boys. So
This has been a fast-paced... Anyways, I won't get sidetracked here. But no, it's... yes, it has. Again, playoffs have been fantastic. We've got a great draft coming up. Hopefully we can snag Tony, get him on to actually, you know, make sense of all the bullshit we've been spewing out. So
if not, I've got other people lined up.
Oh, don't let Tony hear that. You know we're cheating on him. Anyways, so, but no, it's been good chat. Nice to have everybody here tonight. Thanks, Tyler, for joining us. Proud of you. But no, you find me on Twitter, HardyRyan33.
So my final thoughts are going to be a great big thank you to Chris Peters, Dylan Krill, Tony Ferrari, and Will Scout. You can follow them. Chris is at Chris M. Peters. Dylan is at Dylan, DYLAN_KRILL. Will is at Scouching. And Tony is at the Tony Ferrari. Thank them for helping out with my little trading card project, which me and Ryan literally just came up with on a whim at the end of the last episode. And I'm like, I think I can do this. And then I did it. So it was really cool. It was good getting the expert analysis from those guys and seeing that a lot of it matched what our notes said. So that's cool. And I just want to give a big thank you to them because they took time out of their day to help us.
They're busy days.
Yeah, exactly.
Prospect stuff going on.
But you can follow me online at Bringing the Wing. You can follow the Grindline Podcast online at Grindline Pod. You can find our podcasts wherever podcasts are hosted. If we are not there, let me know. I also like to give a shout out to the Hockey Podcast Network. You can follow them on Twitter at HockeyPodNet to find podcasts for almost every team in the league. You can also go to howieshockeytape.com and use promo code Grindline at checkout to get 10% off your order. And use that same promo code at Bring Hockey Back to get 12% off. Shout out Founders, the official beer of the Grindline Podcast. And you can check out our merch at Redbubble if you go to redbubble.com and search the Grindline. There will be some more stuff added whenever I regain my sanity and finish this card project. but that's going to do it for us tonight. So for Ryan and Tyler, I am Greg. You stay classy, Hockey Town.